So, in continuation of last night's talk, I thought we could just read the original translation of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. This is from 1, 2, 300, and 301. Srimurte Madhurim Prekshya Tatalilam Nishamyava Tadbhava Kangshino Yeshu Teshu Sadan Tayanayo Purane Shriyate Padme Punsamapi Bhavediyam. Translation. Those eligible for the practice of Kamanuga Bhakti, those who aspire after and long for the different sentiments of the Vraja Devis, after listening to the pastimes of Lord Krishna, or after seeing the beauty of the deity or picture of the Lord, are alone eligible for either of the two categories or forms of Kamanuga aspect of Raganuga Bhakti. Even male persons can attain such sentiments, as it is stated in the Padma Purana. Text 301. Yata pura maharshaya sarve nanda karanya vasina Jisvaraman harim tatra boktu mai chan suvigahan te sarve stritvamapana samabhutascha gokule harim samprapya kamena tato mukta bhavarnava. Translation. As for example, in the Padma Purana, in olden times when all the great sages who were living in Dandakaranya saw the beautiful person of Lord Rama, they desired to enjoy him. They all were, therefore, born in Gokul as females and were freed forever from earthly association of the ocean of the world by attaining the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. Texts 301 and 302. Commentary. Sri Jiva Goswami observes that the rishis of Dandakaranya cherished a profound longing for the feelings and sentiments of the dearest paramours of Lord Krishna, who lived in the neighborhood of Gokul. Thus, when they saw beautiful Rama, there flared up in the hearts of these rishis, who were practicing extremely hard penances, desires in the wake of the sentiments of association of the Braja Gopis for enjoying the person of Lord Krishna, whose charm and beauty far surpass even those of Lord Rama, and who was to manifest himself in the world in the near future, Dwarpara Yuga. These maharshis also prayed to Lord Rama in their mind that they might be born in Gokul as females when the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna would descend and manifest himself in the world in Dwapara Yuga, so they might also enjoy the Lord's charming person. Owing to their shyness, the rishis prayed to Lord Rama in their hearts only, and did not express anything in spoken words or open prayers. So Lord Rama also, who is omniscient, blessed them in his mind, like a desire tree, for the fulfillment of their mental prayer. Thus the sages were born as females in the wombs of the gopis in Gokul, and somehow reached the famous Gokul of Lord Krishna, and gained spiritual bodies from the Braja gopis, and thus attained Lord Krishna, whose charm and beauty far excel those of Lord Rama. They were therefore able to cross the ocean of material existence through their mental resolve for enjoying the person of Sri Krishna as their beloved husband. It has further been said about these rishis in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 29, verses 9 through 11. Quote, before the Rasa dance, when Lord Krishna attracted the gopis by playing on his flute, at that time the wives of some of the gopas could not come out of their homes to meet their beloved and had to remain indoors. But these wives of the cowherd men, who had already been in deep thoughts about their divine beloved Sri Krishna, now closed their eyes and engaged themselves in intense remembrance. In this way they gave up their material bodies because of the burning pang of separation from their beloved, and attained spiritual bodies. And in their spiritual bodies, they could embrace the pure spiritual body of the Supreme Godhead, Sri Krishna. So you can give me 10th Canto, Volume 2. So Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 29, Krishna and the Gopis Meet. Text 9. Antargraha gita kaschid gopya labda vinigrama krishnam tad bhavana yukta tadir mili talochana. Some of the gopis, however, could not manage to get out of their houses, and instead they remained at home with eyes closed, meditating upon Sri Krishna in pure love. Purport. Throughout the 10th canto, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives elaborate poetic commentaries on Lord Krishna's pastimes. It is not always possible to include these extensive descriptions, but we will quote in its entirety his comments on this verse. The Acharya's comments are as follows. Quote, in this context, we will make our analysis according to the method described by Srila Rupa Goswami's Ujjvala Nilamani. There are two categories of gopis, the eternally perfect, the Nitya Siddhas, and those who have become perfect by practicing Bhakti Yoga, the Sadhana Siddhas. The Sadhana Siddhas are of two categories, those who belong to special groups and those who do not. And there are also two classes of the gopis belonging to special groups, namely the Shruticharis, who came from the group of the personified Vedas, and the Rishicharis, who come from the group of sages who saw Lord Ramachandra in the Dandakaranya forest. This same fourfold categorization of the gopis is given in the Padma Purana. Gopyastu shutayo gyeya rishija gopakanyaka devakanyascha rajendra namanusya katanchana. It is understood that some of the gopis are personified Vedic literatures, while others are reborn sages, daughters of cowherds or demigod maidens. But by no means, my dear king, are any of them ordinary human beings. Here we are informed that although the gopis appeared to be human cowherd girls, they actually were not. Thus, the contention that they are mortals is refuted. The daughters of the cowherds, referred to here as gopakanyas, must be eternally perfect, since we never hear of them having executed any sadhana. Their apparent sadhana of worshipping goddess Katyayani in the role of gopis merely manifests their manner of playing like human beings. And the Bhagavatam narrates the account of this worship only to show how they had fully taken on the role of cowherd girls. That the Gopakanya gopis are actually Nitya Siddhas, eternally perfect devotees of the Lord, is established by a statement in the Brahma Samhita 5.37. Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pavitavitabhi, which proves that they are the Lord's spiritual pleasure potency. Similarly, we have the words of the Gautamya Tantra, Ladini Ya Mahashakti. Further corroboration of their eternal perfection is that these gopis, being co-eternal with Lord Krishna, their lover, are mentioned along with him in the 18-syllable mantra, the 10-syllable mantra, and others, and also that the worship of these mantras and also the shrutis that present them have been in existence since beginningless time. So here Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is analyzing the four categories of gopis mentioned in the Padma Purana. And first he deals with Gopyakanya, the daughters of the cowherd men, and proves that they are Nitya Siddhas, or eternal associates of the Lord. And apart from citing various scriptures, like Brahma Sangita, which state that the gopis are expansions of the pleasure potency of Lord Krishna, he refers to mantras, the Gopal mantra and the Kamagayatri mantra, which have existed from the beginning of time and which refer to Krishna with the gopis. As such, some gopis have been with Krishna eternally, and as such they are Nitya Siddhas, and therefore the one category, Gopakanyas, the daughters of the cowherd men. The Devakanyas, daughters of the demigods, who are mentioned in the verse beginning, Sambhavastvamarastriya, are explained in Sri Ujjvala Nilamani as partial expansions of the gopis who are eternally perfect. That the Shruti Chari gopis, the personified Vedas, are sadhana siddha, is understood from the following words of theirs quoted in the Brihad Vamana Purana. Kandarapakoti lavanye twai driste manamsina kamini bhavam asadya smarakshu nanyasam shaya yata tvaloka vasinya kama tatve na gopika bhajanti ramanam matva chikirsha janivastata. Since we have seen your face, which possesses the beauty of millions of cupids, our minds have become lusty after you, like those of young girls, and we have forgotten all other allurements. We have developed the desire to act toward you as do the gopis who dwell in your transcendental planet and who manifest the nature of Cupid by worshipping you with the idea that you are their paramour. The Rishichari gopis are also sadhana siddha, as stated in the Ujjvala Nilamani. Gopalo pakshaka purvam aprapta bhishta siddhaya. Previously, they were all maharshis living in the Dandaka forest. We find evidence for this in the Padma Purana, Uttarakhanda. Jisvaramam harim tatra bhoktum aichan suvigraham. Te sarve stritvama pana samudbhutas chagokule harim samprapya kamena tato mukta bhavarnavat. This verse says that upon seeing Lord Ramachandra, the sages in the Dandaka forest desired to enjoy Lord Hari, Krishna. In other words, the sight of Lord Rama's beauty reminded them of Lord Hari, Gopal, their personal object of worship, and they then wanted to enjoy with him. But out of embarrassment, they did not act on that desire. Whereupon Lord Sri Rama, who is like a desire tree, gave his mercy to them, even though they had not voiced their request. Thus their desire was fulfilled, as stated by the words beginning, Te Sarve. By means of their lusty attraction, they became freed from the ocean of material existence, the cycle of birth and death, and coincidentally they got the association of Hari in conjugal love. In the present verse of the Bhagavatam, we understand that it was the gopis who had children who were kept forcibly at home. This fact is clear from verses yet to come. Matara Pitara Putra, Bhagavatam 10:29-20. Yat Patya Apatya Suridam Anuvitiranga, Bhagavatam 10:29-32. And Pati Sutanvaya Brachir Bandavan, Bhagavatam 10:31-16. In his comments on the 10th canto, Srila Kavi Karnapur Goswami mentions this fact. Without trying to recall all his thoughts on this verse, we will give the gist of his purport. This is Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quoting from Sri Kavi Karnapur Goswami. Upon seeing the personal form of Lord Ramachandra, the sages who were worshippers of Lord Gopal immediately became elevated to the mature platform of spontaneous devotion, automatically reaching the stages of firm faith, attraction, and attachment. But they had not yet completely freed themselves of all material contamination. Therefore, Sri Yogamaya Devi arranged for them to take birth from the wombs of gopis and become cowherd girls. By associating with the eternally perfect gopis, some of these new gopis fully manifested purva rag, loving attraction for Krishna, as soon as they reached puberty. This kind of attraction develops even before one meets the beloved. When these new gopis got the direct audience of Krishna and physically associated with him, all their remaining contamination became burned up, and they achieved the advanced stages of prema, sneha, and so on. Even though they were in the company of their cowherd husbands, by the power of yoga maya, these gopis remained unsullied by sexual contact with them. Rather, they were situated in purely spiritual bodies that Krishna enjoyed. On the night they heard the sound of Krishna's flute, their husbands tried to stop them. But by the merciful assistance of yoga maya, the sadhana siddha gopis were able to go forth to their beloved, together with the nitya siddha gopis. Other gopis, however, because of not getting the good fortune of associating with the nitya siddha gopis and other advanced gopis, had not achieved the stage of prema, and so their contamination was not completely burned away. They entered the company of their cowherd husbands and, after sexual union with them, gave birth to children. But a short time later, even these gopis developed their purva rag by hankering intensely for the physical association of Krishna, a hankering they acquired by associating with the advanced gopis. Becoming worthy recipients of the mercy of the perfected gopis, they assumed transcendental bodies fit to be enjoyed by Krishna. And when Yoga Maya failed to help them overcome their husbands' attempts to keep them from going out, they felt themselves cast into the worst calamity. Viewing their husbands, brothers, fathers, and other family members as enemies, they came close to dying. Just as other women might remember their mothers or other relatives at the time of death, these gopis remembered the sole friend of their very life, Krishna, as stated in the present verse of the Bhagavatam, beginning with the word antar. It is implied that those ladies were not able to exit because they were held back by their husbands, who were standing before them with sticks in their hands, scolding them. Although these gopis were perpetually absorbed in love for Krishna, at that particular time they meditated upon him and cried out within, "Alas, alas, O only friend of our life, O ocean of the artistic skills of Vrindavan forests, please let us become your girlfriends in some future life, because at this time we cannot see your lotus-like face with our eyes. So be it. we shall look upon you with our minds. Each of them, lamenting to herself in this way, the gopis stood with their eyes shut and meditated deeply upon him. Text 10 and 11. Dusaha preshtaviraha tivratapa tutashubha dhyana pratyachutashlesha nirritya kshina mangala tam eva paramatmanam jara buddhya pisangata jahurguna mayam deham sadhya prakshina bandana. Translation. For those gopis who could not go to see Krishna, intolerable separation from their beloved caused an intense agony that burned away all impious karma. By meditating upon him, they realized his embrace, and the ecstasy they then felt exhausted their material piety. Although Lord Krishna is the Supreme Soul, these girls simply thought of him as their male lover and associated with him in that intimate mood. Thus their karmic bondage was nullified and they abandoned their gross material bodies. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments upon this verse as follows. Here, Shukadeva Goswami speaks in a peculiar way. He presents the intimate object the gopis attained as if it were an external idea, thus keeping its true nature secret from outsiders, while at the same time he reveals to the confidential devotees, well versed in the scientific conclusions of devotional service, the internal meaning that is his real purport. Thus, to outsiders, Shukadeva says that Krishna gave the gopis liberation, but to the confidential hearers, Shukadeva reveals that when the gopis experienced separation from their beloved, there arose in them both immeasurable unhappiness and immeasurable happiness, and that they gradually achieved their desired goal. Thus the verse can be understood as follows. Because of their intolerable separation from their beloved, the gopis felt terrible agony, by which they caused all inauspicious things to tremble. In other words, when people in general hear of the gopis' extreme agony in separation from their beloved, they abandon thousands of inauspicious things, things even as fearsome as the subterranean fires of millions of universes, or the powerful poison swallowed by Lord Shiva. More specifically, those who hear of the gopis' love and separation give up their terrible false ego and, thinking themselves defeated, are shaken. When the gopis meditated on Lord Achyuta, he became manifest and personally came to them, and they experienced great joy by embracing his body, which was full of transcendental love for them. The gopis also experienced great joy by exhibiting personal characteristics and a sense of identification appropriate to such love. That joy made all their good fortune, both material and spiritual, seem paltry by comparison. The implication is that when other persons see how happy the gopis became upon embracing Krishna when he manifests himself directly before them, these other persons feel that thousands of so-called auspicious objects are insignificant by comparison, including the sense gratificatory pleasures found in millions of universes, and even the supersensory pleasure of spiritual bliss, Brahmananda. Thus, hearing of the gopis' distress and the joy that arose respectively out of their separation from the Supreme Lord and their union with him, anyone can get rid of all the reactions of his past activities, both sinful and pious. Vaishnavas certainly do not think that sinful and pious reactions can be destroyed only by being lived out, since, after all, neither separation from the Supreme Lord nor direct association with him are in the category of karma. This kind of elimination of karmic reactions occurs in the stage of bhajan, for those who have come to the level of anartha nivritti. And thus the gopis thought of Krishna, the Paramatma, or supreme worthy object of all love, as their paramour. Even though such a concept is ordinarily contemptible, the gopis realized Krishna in an even fuller sense than did Rukmini and his other queens, who thought of him most respectfully as their husband. That thinking of the Lord as one's paramour is superior to thinking of him as one's husband is proved by the fact that unbridled pure love is superior to domesticated love. This idea is borne out by the following words of Sri Uddhava: Yadustyajam svajanam arya patam chahitva. These ladies of Vraja abandon their families and their advanced religious principles, even though to do so is very difficult. Bhagavatam 10:47-61. In his pastimes on earth, Krishna often turns the most lowly things into the most elevated. As Bhishma stated, Krishna's pastime of acting as Arjuna's chariot driver was even more elevated than the pastime in which he acted as mighty king of kings. Vijayaratha kutumbat atatare trithahaya rashmini chach chiryakshane. I concentrate on the chariot driver of Arjuna, who stood with a whip in his hand and a bridle rope in his right hand and a bridle rope in his left, and who was very careful to protect Arjuna's chariot by all means. Bhagavatam 1:3-39. Similarly, in the Lord's appearance as Krishna, we see that the normally inferior conjugal rasa becomes better than the normally superior mood of shanta rasa, as also the attitude of loving a paramour becomes superior to the loving exchange between legitimate spouses, and lowly gunja necklaces, red oxide paste, and peacock feathers become better than the most excellent jeweled ornaments. But, it may be objected, it is not fitting for the Supreme Lord to sport with women whose bodies have already been enjoyed by other men. This objection is replied to by the words beginning jahu. The word deham is used here in the singular form to indicate unity of category, even though the gopis are many. Some authorities say that by the power of yoga maya, these gopis' bodies disappeared in a way no one noticed. But other authorities say that the body referred to in this context is the inferior body, composed of the modes of material nature. Thus, by the prominence of the adjective gunamayam, it is understood that before the gopis heard the sound of Krishna's flute, their bodies had been twofold, material and spiritual. But upon hearing the flute, they gave up the material bodies which their husbands had enjoyed. We may analyze this as follows. When devotees begin prosecuting devotional service in accordance with the instructions of a bona fide spiritual master, they engage ears and other senses in pure devotion by hearing of the Lord, chanting His glories, remembering Him, offering obeisances to Him, giving Him personal attendance, and so on. Thus the devotees make the Lord's transcendental qualities the objects of their senses, as stated by the Lord Himself. Nirguno Madhapashaya Bhagavatam 11.25.26. In this way the devotees' bodies transcend the material modes. Yet sometimes the devotees may take as their sense objects mundane sounds and so on, and that is material. Thus, a devotee's body can have two aspects, transcendental and material. According to one's level of devotional service, to that degree, the transcendental aspects of one's body become prominent, and the material aspects diminish. This transformation is described in the following verse from the Bhagavatam, 11.2.42. Bhakti pareshanu bhavo viraktir anyatra chaisa chika eka kala prapadyamanasya yatanatsasyus tushti pushti kshud apayon nugasam. Devotion, direct experience of the Supreme Lord, and detachment from all other things. These three occur simultaneously for one who has taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the same way that pleasure, nourishment, and relief from hunger come simultaneously and increasingly with each bite for a person engaged in eating. When one achieves totally pure love of God, the material portions of the body disappear, and the body becomes completely spiritual. Nonetheless, so as not to disturb the false opinions of atheists, and as to protect the confidentiality of devotional service, the Supreme Lord usually has His illusory energy exhibit the demise of the gross body. An example of this is the disappearance of the Yadus during the Moshala Leela. Sometimes, however, to proclaim the excellence of Bhakti Yoga, Krishna will allow a devotee to go back to Godhead in His self-same body, as in the case of Dhruva Maharaj. We can cite evidence for this point from the 25th chapter of the 11th canto, text 32. Yena me nirjita somya guna jivena chittaja bhakti yogena manishto madbhavaya prapadyate. Quote, a living entity who conquers the modes of material nature, which are manifested from the mind, can dedicate himself to me, Krishna, by the process of devotional service, and thus attain pure love for me. Here the Lord states that the defeat and destruction of that which is composed of the material nature can be brought about only by the process of devotional service. Therefore, we should understand from the present verse of the Bhagavatam that the gopis who could not go to see Krishna had their inauspicious material bodies removed or burned up, while their auspicious spiritual bodies, far from being destroyed, simply grew more prominent because of the ecstasy the gopis felt by embracing Krishna in meditation. Thus their bondage was completely destroyed. By the help of Yoga Maya, they got free from ignorance and also from the prohibitions of their husbands and other relatives. We should not make the mistake of explaining this falling away of the gopis' bodies as a result of their dying. As the Lord himself states, Bhagavatam 10:47-37, Yamaya kritata ratriam vane smin vraja astita alabda rasa kalyano mapur mad virya chintaya. Some of those all auspicious gopis could not directly join me in enjoying the rasa dance on that night in this Vrindavan forest, yet they still achieved my association by remembering my transcendental pastimes. By using the word kalyanya in this verse, the Lord implies, even though these gopis wanted to give up their bodies because of their husband's prohibitions and the torment of separation from me, for them to die at the very beginning of the most auspicious festival of the rasa dance would have been displeasing to me and thus inauspicious. So they did not die. More evidence that the gopis who were prevented from going to see Krishna did not physically die is provided by a statement of Sri Shukadev's later in this canto, 10:47-38. Ta uchur udavam pritas tad sandesha gata smriti. Then they, the gopis, replied to Uddhava, feeling satisfied because his message had reminded them of Krishna. Here we understand that the gopis speaking to Uddhava were the ones who had not had the chance to participate directly in the rasa dance because of being held captive in their homes. Thus, the conclusion is that they gave up their material bodies without dying. Parched by the intense heat of separation, their material bodies gave up their materiality and became purely spiritual, just like the bodies of such great devotees as Dhruva Maharaj. This is the meaning of the gopis, quote, giving up their bodies, end quote. The following analogy illustrates the statuses of the various gopis. By observing 7 or 8 ripe mangoes on a tree, we can ascertain that all the fruits on the tree are ripe. Then we can pick them all and bring them home, where in due course the sun's rays and other agents will make them fine-looking, fragrant, and delicious, fit to be offered to the king for his enjoyment. When the time comes for the king to take his meal, a discriminating servant can choose those fruits ready to offer him. From the appearance of the fruits, the servant can tell which are ripe in the middle but raw on the outside, and thus not yet fit for the king. By the application of a special heating process, these remaining fruits will become ripe in 2 or 3 days, and then they too will be ready to offer to the king. Similarly, among the Munichari gopis who took birth in Gokula, those who completely gave up the materiality of their bodies and very early in life achieved purely spiritual bodies were able to remain untouched by any other man. Thus, Yogamaya allowed them to join the Nitya Siddha and other advanced gopis when they went to meet Krishna. Other Munichari gopis still retained some connection with the external material body. But even they, after being parched by the heat of separation from Sri Krishna, gave up the materiality of their bodies and assumed perfectly transcendental bodies, purified of all taint of contact with other men. On the night of the Rasa dance, Yogamaya sent some of these gopis out behind those who had already gone out. Others, who Yogamaya saw, still had a slight amount of contamination. She kept back to further purify with the heat of separation, and then she sent them out on some other night. After enjoying the pleasures of the Rasa dance and other pastimes with Krishna, the Munichari gopis who had participated went back to their homes when the night was over, as did the Nitya Siddha and other advanced gopis. But now Yogamaya protected these Munichari gopis from the material association of their husbands. In other words, these gopis were devoid of any selfish attachment for husband, children, and so on. Since these gopis were thoroughly immersed in the great ocean of love for Krishna, their breasts dried up so that they could not feed their infants. And to their family members, they appeared as if haunted by ghosts. In conclusion, it is not unseemly that the gopis who were previously in material association joined in the Rasa dance. Some authorities, however, maintain that the gopis who were kept back in their houses did not have children. According to them, whenever such words as apatya, children, are used in verses yet to come, these words refer to the children of co-wives, to adopted children, or to nephews and nieces. Any questions or comments?
I mean, I don't understand much of it, but from what I understand, that the different groups of gopis, and so if like all these sages or the munis that became gopis, they were sad in the city. They were, so do they join? Can they join with groups of eternally liberated gopis in the spiritual world when they once they're liberated? Or like, are the groups set already? Like, if you're if you already, I think I mean more in terms of like some there's living entities that never fall, and then there's living entities that can fall into it. So if you fall, if you're part of that group, I don't understand. I don't know if you understand what I'm asking.
Well, when the Munichari gopis were qualified enough, they got the association of the Nitya Siddha gopis. And by the association of the Nitya Siddha gopis, they developed purva rag, or intense attraction to Krishna, even before they met him. So when Krishna played his flute on the full moon night of the Sarab season, because they had already developed their attraction for Krishna by the association of the Nityasiddha gopis and other advanced gopis. Yogamaya allowed them to leave their homes and join with Krishna. But other Munichari gopis who were not fortunate enough to have the association of Nityasiddha gopis did not develop Purva Rag or such strong attraction to Krishna before they met him. And because they were not fully qualified, Yogamaya kept them in their houses. And then, as we read, they felt intense agony because of separation from Krishna. And then when Krishna came to them and embraced them, internally they felt extreme ecstasy. And by the intense agony, they burnt up all impiety, and by the extreme ecstasy, they burnt up all piety. And in other words, they became completely pure. And then Yogamaya arranged for them to associate with the Nityasiddha and other advanced gopis. And then they became qualified to join with Krishna. So, according to one's qualification, even when one is a sadhana siddha, I mean, yeah, he or she will get the association of Nityasiddha gopis sometimes. And they also serve the Lord in the association of Nityasiddha gopis. Was that your...
Yeah, but in terms of the groups that are already there, or...
No, here groups means categories. It doesn't mean groups.
Parties, like different parties of gopis.
No, it doesn't mean that.
Yeah.
Because sadhana siddha gopis do join the parties of Nityasiddha gopis.
Okay,
that's the goal.
Right.
That's the goal, to serve under the Nityasiddha gopis like Lalita, Vishakha, Rupa Mantri, and so on.
Last night that you described about some of the gopis who still have some mature contamination, therefore they couldn't join their residence, and the heat of separation, heat of purifying. There's these pastimes that take place in Vrindavan in the material world, but are not in the spiritual world.
No. The process is that when one attains perfection in the material world, he takes birth on the planet in the material world where Krishna has his pastimes. And then one develops the higher stages after prema. Like, you know, sneha, man, rag, anurag, bhav, mahabhav. And then, after gaining entry into Krishna's pastimes in the material world, one is promoted to the spiritual world in the next life. So the descriptions we're reading here in Srimad Bhagavatam are from the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan on earth, or Mathura or Dwarka. on earth.